Well, happy Chinese New Year. Happy Lunar New Year to everybody. Year of the Rabbit, according to the Chinese zodiac. But on the way in, I learned something very interesting in the radio, that the Vietnamese have a different zodiac. It's the Year of the Cat. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, because I get to be that.
Yeah, Kate gets to be a cat. Kate's the year. Anyone else here? You're the rabbit person here? Oh, one, two, oh, three, four. Well, there are rabbits proliferate, don't they? So. Not surprising there's so many rabbits in the room. But I hope this weekend or soon you'll be able to enjoy a good feast. Perhaps some of you are going down to the celebrations that are going on. Well, today I'd like to bring up something to talk with you about. That's at the heart of our practice, and yet we often don't talk about it using this particular word. I'd like to bring up discipline and what discipline is or might be on the Buddhist path. And I want to start off by saying I certainly don't have a definitive answer about what discipline is. But I think it's important for us to look at and to consider what role discipline is and what it means for us, first of all. What is discipline? I know, and I include myself in this, discipline is a harsh word. When I was a young child, and maybe this is true for you as well, discipline meant a clout from my father when I was out of line, at least when he thought I was out of line, or being sent to my room. It was always, you know, a way to control, to prevent unwanted behaviors or speech. And my father was generally not a violent man. And I imagine that he too, when he was a youth, he was disciplined by his parents and by his teachers. He grew up in England, you know, before World War II, and I think discipline was quite rigorous then. And then in World War II, he was trained as a commando, which probably really solidified his view of what discipline as a corrective was. Basically a medicine for unwanted behavior. So, but I wonder what comes to mind for you when you hear the word discipline. So I wanted to examine this a little bit more. And so for the moment, let's leave behind the sense of discipline as that kind of, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child kind of thing, or perhaps a more adult version would be something like I should or I must fulfill the expectations of others or my own rigorous expectations, right? Need to do this. If I don't, I'm a failure. So a hint to the meaning, the root meaning of discipline, a hint is the word disciple. Very similar, right? Disciple. And disciple means a follower, right? Or a student. One who studies. So when I look this up, the word discipline comes from the Latin word discipla, meaning instruction or training. And it's derived from the root word of discere, meaning to learn. That's what it means, to learn. So the question may be, well, what is learned? Well, bodies of knowledge or fields of study are sometimes referred to as disciplines, right? The discipline of history, to know the tools of how to study and learn about history. But I think even when we are studying about something, or maybe practicing an art form or sport or any activity that requires a kind of special skill that we're doing over and over again, there's also another kind of learning that usually takes place. I think in those moments we begin to learn about our own nature, about the scope and limits of our body and mind. And whether we are aware of it or not, but certainly as children we can take up a study, a sport or something, and really be heavily involved in it. At some point in our life, I think most of us are introduced to or take up a discipline in this sense of the word, of learning of one's own true nature, the limits of one's own body and mind. And for me, it happened in the world of martial arts. I don't remember ever in the study, when I was studying Kung Fu or studying Aikido, any teacher ever sitting me down and telling me in detail what I had to do, the discipline I had to follow, beyond just the basic rules of courtesy and following the instructions in class. Without direct teaching, or maybe anything more than a kind of nudging, I was expected to learn, along with the moves and techniques, proper language, deportment, attitude, pace, both within the dojo, the place of practice, and outside the dojo, the place of practice. In other words, I needed to learn about the non-physical container so that true discipline or true learning could occur. And when I was thinking about this, putting together this little talk, I thought we might call this teaching without teaching. Teaching without teaching. Now, I've practiced both Japanese and Chinese martial arts, practiced both here in Canada and in Japan. And in the various kinds of martial arts that I practiced, and in both places, much was really taught without teaching. And really, there are far more direct and efficient methods of teaching than this teaching without teaching. Like passing along well-written instructions, like we try to do here. Manuals, or seniors explaining and guiding juniors. That's all very efficient, can be very practical. But this teaching without teaching is one way that the discipline of the person occurs. And what I mean by that is how a person learns about themselves. So let me give you an example to help explain what I mean. I went to Japan when I was 19, very wet behind the ears. And Mr. Hayakawa, a Japanese Aikido teacher living in the small city of Kanazawa, who had never met me, but had agreed to take me on as a student and arrange for my visa, all on the recommendation of his student, who had been teaching me here in Vancouver. So I lived with my Japanese sensei, my teacher, for a year. He provided room, board, and included me in all the various activities that he did and did in the club, and never asked for money. And I learned much from him. I learned techniques. I learned how to run a martial arts class. I learned how to greet other teachers properly, etc., etc. But I also learned from him the untaught teaching of what I'm calling true discipline. the ability to remain steadfast and open to my whole nature. Through his example, I learned that real freedom actually comes from limitation. It comes from thoughtful limitation. So contrary to the popular notion of freedom that seems to be so prevalent in today's society, you know, to do what I want, when I want, to get what I want, when I want. That seems to define individual freedom, sadly. My sensei understood that that notion of freedom is really a great burden, because one is ungrounded, held in the wholesome container of discipline. We have the possibility of not being buffeted around by what's known in the Buddhist tradition as the eight worldly winds of either trying to get or trying to avoid things like gain, loss, status, disgrace, praise, blame, pleasure, pain. Now, this understanding of what I'm calling true discipline for me was really slow arising. For much of my life, I understood discipline as something imposed in a way that usually results in stress and relies on judgmentalism, whether I impose it on myself or it's imposed on me. I think you know what I mean. You know, not going to the gym enough, not eating the right food, not following carefully laid out plan for learning French, all kinds of things, right? Not to mention whether that's imposed from outside or inside, or from yourself. And then at some point, of course, giving up in frustration. Perhaps adding a story of sour grapes onto it. Well, I didn't really want it anyway, it's not that important. And I noticed failing to follow a schedule, for example, or some other self-imposed expectation usually just made me cranky, impatient, and judgmental. Discipline. True discipline is not making yourself do the things you're supposed to do. I don't think so. I've never had much success in that. Maybe I'm just an outlier. Discipline, I believe now, is an act of kindness. So let me explain what I mean by that. During the Aikido classes in Japan, my sensei almost never gave praise. He would just look at you, nod his head, and maybe introduce a little refinement. That's it. And that's when I was doing really good. When I was performing something incorrectly, he would maybe stop and show me once more, and then just say, more practice. And he left me. Usually I figure it out on my own. I can probably count on one hand over the year that I spent with him, and we practiced almost every day, the number of times he would come back twice to correct what I was doing. So he left me to figure it out on my own, and I would try again, and I'd try again, and try again. And sometimes I would get it, but frankly, often, I'm a slow learner, and I would not get it. But I understood later that getting it right was really the minor goal. What sensei was teaching by not teaching was simply returning. He gave little praise, and he gave actually very little censor as well, because he was teaching discipline. Discipline, in this sense, has nothing to do with blame or bullying or shaming. It has nothing to do with being good or being bad. It's about returning. Returning to the moment, the fullness of the moment, usually returning to your body, to your heart. And it's through the act of returning again and again and again that the possibility of learning, deep learning, occurs. And this returning is simply coming back to the present moment and recognizing where and how one is. For example, during these training sessions that I did with my beloved sensei, anger. Why doesn't he come back? Tell me again, I didn't get it. Anger, despair, hope, frustration, desire, joy, excitement, self-congratulations. All of these things appeared and disappeared over and over again in these training sessions. And gradually, though, through all this, discipline began to happen. In addition to learning about the techniques, there also arose some freedom from the grip of the habitual energies that live within me, live within all of us, and some insight about my human condition. Nothing earth-shattering, but also important, so important, as I was no longer so strongly pushed and pulled by an emotional state, and so freer to act from a centered and better balanced mind. It was, I think, the beginning of a very long journey to not believe and to try let go of the emotional narratives. Now, maybe in my rather jumbled telling of this, you have made the connection to Zazen practice. Settling ourselves on a cushion, a bench, or a chair, we do so with some intention. The intention is to be present. And to help us remain present, we may bring awareness to the sensation of the body, sitting upright, sitting still, the gentle going in and out of breath, or maybe a phrase or a word or counting that we'll use. It's a simple practice. Right? But in that practice, something very interesting happens. Some part of you notices when you are gone. Some part of you notices when you are absorbed primarily in some thought that's going on in your head. When the intention to follow the breath, for example, is gone. Disappears, right? And in its place are thoughts about, oh, what shall I make for dinner tonight? I've got a date. I want to impress him. I want to impress her. God, you know that cheesecake at Cheesecake Etc. is usually really good, but you know that last piece I had, they're skimped on the... Or maybe you're old and well-worn criticisms begin to arise, like, God, I'm so shy, I can't make friends, I can't do this. I'm not eating right, or, God, I should, you know, I've got to go to the gym more. My six pack is disappearing. All kinds of things like this pop to mind, right, as we sit. And then, of course, memories, right? The old flame that we had in high school, or, you know, the asshole who was our coworker, all the kinds of things. And it seems to me, almost, in my own experience, very little rhyme or reason for what floats through the brain. And yet suddenly, in the midst of the great drama that is unfolding in your imagination at this very moment, in the mid-story, in the mid-longing, in the mid-kvetching, in the mid-fantasy, there's a voice or a little awareness comes from somewhere, and it brings us back into the present moment where we can renew our intention. Back to the breath. And so we do. We come back to the breath. This voice or awareness leads us back to where we want to be. Or at least where we think we should be. I mean, maybe you want to be lost in your fantasy, but the intention is to be present on the cushion. It brings us back. So we return, as I'm sure you have all experienced over and over again. And in that returning and stability in the present moment, we wake up more and more to our nature, who we are, what we are experiencing in this moment, because we are not distracted. I think this is discipline in action. It is coming home from the distraction. So in this way, what I'm calling discipline is not based on fear or self-punishment, but I think actually begins to arise from the confidence and dignity of returning to ourselves as we are in this moment. Discipline is the way we align our life with our fundamental dignity. However, as we all know, not easy. And simply thinking about discipline, I should be this, by that, applying it haphazardly, will not free us from impulsive actions and distractions. It is the act of returning applied with some skill and some carefulness to the present that we really open to our deepest intentions of cultivating wisdom and compassion. Discipline, in the sense of returning, conditions the mind not to swing from impulse to impulse. And I believe that when we create the conditions for stability through the container, through our practice of Zazen, we are better able to really honor, to uphold our deep intentions, our deep commitments of body and speech, how we want to be in this world. When the mind is erratic, suffering is never far behind. So discipline helps us to act on what we know is right. This returning over and over again tempers so we're not easily swept away. And rather than shaming, this discipline reminds us of who we are and where our commitments and intentions lie. It really does, I believe, bring us home. And supplies the support to slow down enough and be present enough so that we can live our lives without making such a big mess of them. And And as we explore and really enter and cultivate discipline, I believe it provides the encouragement to step further and further into the vastness of our being. Now, as many of us know, the Buddhist texts have all kinds of lists. Six of this, the three of that, the four of this. And one of them is the six paramitas, which we've talked about before here, Kate and I. And these six are known as the actions of a bodhisattva. And they're generally listed as generosity, patience, exertion, sometimes discipline. There's other words as used as well, but mindfulness and wisdom. Some translators use the word morality or ethical discipline rather than simply discipline. At any rate, in the six paramitas, the discipline or the ethical action generally refers to a set of intentions or commitments to live by. And those commitments are one example of a container in which discipline can occur. We come back to whatever those commitments, intentions are. We come back to them. And there's all kinds of examples of this in the Buddhist tradition. For example, the Bodhisattva precepts that we recite every full moon give us a container as well to practice discipline. Remember, I'm using discipline in that sense of I come back. Not to kill, but to give life, not to take what is not given, but be generous, not to misuse sexuality, but maintain integrity in personal relationships, to refrain from false speech, but to speak truth, to refrain from intoxicants, and maintain a clear mind, not to slander, but use kind speech. Those are the containers. That provides the container. And we each cultivate consciously in this practice the life we wish to give this world, the actions and the speech with which we will honor the great beauty and power of this world, which we honor our life itself, I think. So this discipline, or the paramita of discipline, perhaps I could say, has within it the quality of remembrance. Remembrance of what is beneficial and what is harmful to us. Remembrance of what is beneficial and what is harmful to others. And yeah, those lists help. We recite them. My memory is getting worse and worse, short-term memory, so maybe I should recite them more often than once a month, because important to remember. But they're also broader. This discipline is broader. Like we remember that when hatred arises in our mind, that hatred causes suffering to ourselves and, of course, to others. And we return. Returning to this present moment, returning to the body, the breath, the place of stability. And in that returning opens the possibility of using an antidote to the hatred. Perhaps. Perhaps we cultivate compassion. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling hatred. Now, compassion for myself, for this hatred, for the person or thing that I'm hating. Or maybe another response may be awe. What caused this hatred to arise? In developing some understanding. so that it no longer controls me. But it all begins with returning. Understanding, cultivating, and practicing discipline is really challenging. It's easy to fall into rigidity and blaming. So we need, I think, to bring real compassionate awareness to our discipline. Partly, we need to continuously question our understanding of the purpose and result of our discipline. Right? Am I just beating myself up again because I dropped the ball? Not so helpful. And is this discipline that I am engaged in, is this really helpful? Is there a sense of thriving even because I am engaging in this? Is there clarity of intention and motivation? Am I doing this because I was told to do it? Or because I deeply believe it brings benefit, ease, comfort? And is determination present? Not giving up when some kind of setback arises or falling into some bullshit excuse, like, it's the last episode of Orphan Black, I've got to watch it. I don't know. And as I learned from, particularly from my Aikido teacher, does discipline have boundaries and a willingness to endure some discomfort and forfeit of desires, but not to an unhealthy extent? In fact, it is the very forfeiting of desires that we begin to discover our freedom and really who we are. But not to an unhealthy extent. And what I have learned is that what is most helpful is to be open to the support received from the Sangha, to all the others around me who are also engaged in this practice. Even in the Aikido dojo in Japan, discipline, whether outward or inward, was always tempered with kindness, with the understanding that its purpose of discipline is one of benevolence. So here are the words of Pema Chodron, the American teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, written many books, that I think sums up what I'm trying to say in one way, a different, little different way. And she wrote this: what we discipline is not our badness or our wrongness. What we discipline is any form of potential escape from reality. In other words, discipline allows us to be right here and connect with the richness of this moment. And what makes this discipline free from severity is prajna, wisdom. It is not the same as being told not to enjoy anything pleasurable or to control ourselves at any cost. Instead, this journey of discipline provides the encouragement that allows us to let go. It's a sort of undoing process that supports us in going against the grain of our painful, habitual patterns. Patience, I think, is a sibling of discipline. The understanding and accepting that change can only happen so quickly. And maybe the change that I am longing for may not even happen in this lifetime. But that's our practice. zazen. Those are the two key ingredients: patience and discipline. Coming back over and over. Coming back is the discipline, patience is the over and over part. But this is not imposed by someone or something outside. It is the way we return to our deepest nature. I hope over the next little while that you can give some thought to your own experience of discipline and whether that's really true discipline or not. What is discipline for you? And if it is something rigorous applied from outside based on, you know, shame and blaming and judgment, please do your best to put that down. That will never be helpful. And I think together, let's cultivate a different understanding. We want to live our truest, deepest, most beautiful life. The discipline is coming back to that. Ah, yeah. Ah, yeah. And as much as we can, you know, without judgment, evaluation. And when we do it, you know, it's pretty sweet. I'll stop here.